So I did something this week that I like never do. And honestly, there's a simple reason why I never do this. And it's because when I was married 24 years ago to Trish, I weighed about 130 pounds. And so my ring fit a different way 24 years ago than it fits right now. And so there's something that I never do for one very simple reason, which is I don't take off my wedding band hardly ever. And, you know, being a Sunday morning, excited to be here, it's not coming off. That's just a simple fact of the matter. I'm not 130, 135 pounds anymore, and this ring does not fit the way it did back in 1992. But I hardly ever take my wedding band off, not just because I'm old and fat, but more importantly is that it is a link to my lifelong commitment to my wife. There is nothing about me that ever wants to take off my wedding band. It's a part of me, and it's a continual, common, everyday reminder to me of the vows that we exchanged 24 years ago. And so I love my wedding band, and it's nothing special. It's just simple little wedding band. There's nothing inscribed on it. There's no fancy artwork. There's nothing about it that is unique except for the fact that to me, it's a simple and common reminder of my lifelong commitment to my wife. Well, I took it off this week because we had a friend come to the youth center where I work in the afternoons, and he's a potter. And so we had young men and young women throwing pots in the youth center, and they were having a good time. And after a couple of days of pot throwing went on, he said, "Hey, Josh, would you like to throw a pot?" And I've never worked with a potter's wheel, and sure, that would be fun. And I realized that my ring would leave a mark in this little mug that I was going to make because you have to get all up and in the clay. And so I took my ring off and I set it on the table and I threw my little pot and because it's and my little cup, and it was fun and we had a moment, and then you know what I did? I walked right out of that room without my wedding ring, and it was still sitting on the table in the youth center. And like just saying that, some of you are like like your heart jumps a little bit. It's just a simple, I mean, if this ring cost a couple hundred bucks, I would be stunned if it's even worth that much money. It's a common, simple little thing, but it's a link to my lifelong commitment to my wife. It's a common little thing that represents a very important lifelong, life-changing commitment to me. And so thankfully, before I left the youth center, I don't know how, I don't know if I hit my hand a certain way or if I looked at my, I don't know what happened, but I knew right where I left it, and I walked in, and I was like, if any of these little punks took my ring, I'm gonna kill them dead. Not that the ring is worth anything. I could replace it so easily, but it's a symbol, a common everyday symbol of a lifelong commitment. And those kids, whether they saw it or not, I don't know, but they knew better. My ring was right where I left it, slid it right on my finger. I was, whew, okay, good, that was a close one. There's a pile of rocks on a bookcase in our house that Trish and I collected on our honeymoon. It's like five or six little rocks ranging in size from little pebbles to little rocks about this big. And on our honeymoon, we collected these rocks and I got out some super glue and I created the honeymoon rock man. And it's, they're just little rocks that we picked up along the shore of a lake that we were staying by. And I don't know, a little super glue, and 10 minutes later, there was the honeymoon rock man. He doesn't have any arms. He has a big ugly head and a big fat body and little skinny toes, and he's a little wobbly, but he's survived, and the boys know that if you're going to get rambunctious or if you're going to, you know, start swinging wiffle ball bats around, you don't do it anywhere near the honeymoon rock man. He's not worth anything. He's just five or six common stones that we could easily replace. And I'm sure with 10 or 15 minutes and more super glue or hot glue, I could probably recreate something that to you would look just like the real honeymoon rock man. But he is a simple little common reminder of simple, everyday, common materials of our lifelong commitment to each other. Today, we are beginning a series, and we're going to be looking at the I am statements made by Jesus that are found in the Gospel of John. And one of the beauties of these I am statements is he says, I am, and then he uses a metaphor of something very simple, very common, very understandable to then explain or illustrate an eternal truth. And today, we're looking at the verse that is found in John chapter 6, verse 35. I am the bread of life. And so we're going to take a look at that verse, and we're going to talk about the bread of life. And of course, with today being a communion Sunday, there's some special significance to that for us. There is a common, simple loaf of bread sitting up here on the platform. And I was talking to a friend before church. Because it's communion Sunday, and most of us probably remembered that or got the email this week, or it's the first Sunday of the month, if you even noticed that there was a loaf of bread on the platform this morning, you had an idea that it had something to do with the fact that we were having a communion service. None of you came up here and poked it. And if one of your children ran up here and started chewing on it, they would have been in trouble really, really quick. Why? It's just a loaf of bread, but it's a link to something eternal, and we all know it. We know that it's tied with biblical truth. We know that it's tied with a communion service, and this is not a toy. Yesterday, if your child poked this loaf of bread, nobody would, oh, hey, don't poke that loaf of bread. But today, it's a symbol. It's just a common loaf of bread, but today, it is a symbol. It's a reminder. It's a pointer to something which is eternal, which is our faith in Jesus Christ, because he said, I am the bread of life. None of you would dare come up and touch this bread, and your kids would be in a big trouble if they had come up and poked this bread this morning. It's common and it's simple. We don't mess with our wedding rings. We don't mess with our wedding albums. They have special places in our lives. Why? It's not necessarily that they're so valuable in and of themselves, especially our rings. It's that they are linked to something that is for our whole life. And in the case of Jesus, with his statement, I am the bread of life, it's a link to something eternal. So once upon a time, Jesus was doing a lot of miracles on the western side of the Sea of Galilee in what you and I would know of as modern day Israel, and he was healing a lot of people. Well, he sent his disciples out on their first ever missions trip, two by two. He gave them special authority. They came back from that trip and they were tired. Jesus was tired, and so they traveled around the northern edge of the Sea of Galilee and went to the eastern edge of the Sea of Galilee, which you and I would know of as the Golan Heights today, and they were looking to just spend a little bit of time by themselves relaxing and resting. But sure enough, you know what happens, and it's recorded in John chapter 6, a whole lot of people, thousands and thousands of people, followed them on that little hike from the west side of the Sea of Galilee all the way through the northern side and down the eastern side and joined them on the Golan Heights. And as Jesus saw them coming, he knew, he even told them why they were coming. He said, you're coming because you want to see more miraculous healings. John tells us they're coming to see more miraculous healings. And then Jesus says something entirely unanticipated, entirely unexpected. He looks to his disciples and says, what are you boys going to do for dinner? Well, how are we going to cook dinner for all of these people? And the scripture records it was 5,000 men. And so kind of like the princess party where we're just counting princesses and we say we have 190 princesses, but we know that between the three parties that there's going to be between 400 and 500 people. The Bible does the same thing in this case. There were 5,000 men, but we know that it wasn't just a men's group that was coming around the east side of the lake. So there were probably multiple thousands, maybe 10,000 or more actual people. He's looking to his 12 boys and he says, what are you going to do for dinner? It's absurd. It's preposterous. He knows it. And John records in John chapter 6 that he was doing it to test their faith. Well, they said the first thing that they thought of was money. Well, even if we had a lot of money, even if we had like 9 months' wages, we are not going to be able to give everybody enough bread just to have a bite. And so Jesus says, you're right. Money's out of the question. Money's not really going to solve this. What's for dinner? And so Andrew, who is from that area, a local boy, looks at another little local boy who had his sack lunch with him. And he said, well, here's his kid. He's got 5 little loaves of bread and 2 fish. But what is that amongst so many? And you're familiar with the story. Jesus says, have them sit down in groups of 10s and 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. Have them sit down to prepare for a meal. Jesus stood up. He said a blessing over the 5 little loaves of bread and the 2 fish. And he began to distribute them to the people who were seated there on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee in what you and I would call the Golan Heights, what's known as the Golan Heights. And the scripture goes on to record that not only did everybody get to eat their fill, but there were 12 baskets of leftovers. Do you think there is any significance to the fact that there were 12 baskets of leftovers after the feeding of the 5,000 and Jesus has 12 disciples? What do you think he was trying to show his boys? He was probably trying to show his boys that in meeting the needs of others, their own needs were going to be met. There's a lot that we could say about the feeding of the 5,000, and I'm going to keep it short today because it is a communion Sunday. If you are visiting today and you're like, I love that church. It was like a 15, 20-minute sermon. That's the best. That's not normal. Normally, it's like a 30 to 35-minute sermon, but I try to keep it closer to 25, so don't fall in love with River Church today. If this is your first time, I love that short sermon, guy. Come back. Come back and see if you're still a big fan. So I'm going to keep it short today. But one of those important points from the feeding of the 5,000 is that Jesus had a lesson for his boys, which was in meeting the needs of others by faith, you're going to have your own needs met. Why else would there be 12 baskets of leftovers, one for each of his boys? And so that's the story. That's the miracle that precedes this teaching. Just one verse this morning, John chapter 6, verse 35. And now this is Jesus talking to the crowd because guess what? They continue to follow him around the lake. They continue to follow him around. And basically, they're saying, feed us forever. You know, we came to follow you because we wanted to see a sideshow of miraculous healings. And wow, you know, the bottom line is not everybody in the crowd was sick, but everybody in the crowd was hungry or got hungry. And so Jesus did something that would mean something to everybody in the crowd. And like, yeah, we're liking this guy. Let's crown him king. And Jesus begins to share with them. And this is just one verse that he says, John chapter 6, verse 35. Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. And of course, the response from them is, well, what do we have to do so that we can always get this bread? Kind of like the woman at the well, if you remember her from John chapter 4, chapter 5. Sir, give me this water forever so that I don't have to come to this well all the time. And there are a number of reasons why she didn't want to come to the well. I just want to take one sip and be good forever. I never want to be thirsty again. And these people say the same thing. Give us this bread. Just like Moses fed the people in the desert with the manna while they were in the wilderness. We're in the wilderness right now. The season of the Passover is happening right now. So we're kind of thinking about Moses and Israel right now anyways. Give us that bread where we just take a few bites and we never feel like we ever have to eat the bread again. Because Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. I came across a word a year or so ago. Do you guys remember the four young people that were here from Nashville, our interns? And they led worship for a few months, and while we were getting our own worship team up and running, wonderful young men and women, two young men, two young women. I learned a new word from one of the young ladies. Her name was Lauren. And she's like this tall and weighs like 90 pounds, right? And she was over for dinner one night, or we were having a meal or something, and she walked into the house, and she goes, I'm hangry. I had never heard that word before in my life. And coming from this tiny little girl that I could have picked up and thrown out the window, it was just so funny, because instantly I understood that hangry means you're hungry, but you're also angry. Like you need food so bad that it's more than just hunger, it's actually messing with your whole life. Like you can't do anything right now because you're hungry and you're angry, so you're hangry. And so Lauren came into the house, we're sharing with her, and she said she's hangry. And you know, she's so small and so petite, like even thinking that she was actually hangry was hilarious. And then with her, when she was hangry, what she wanted was like a carrot stick. And then she would like eat the carrot stick and she's like, oh, I'm so full. Oh my gosh, I couldn't eat another thing. Like that was Lauren. That was Lauren. Like a carrot stick would satisfy her hanger, right? So it was just funny. But I fell in love with the word and I liked the idea that it's hunger that is just so, you're so hungry that actually now it's messing with the rest of your life and you can't focus on anything. You have no patience for anybody else. You don't even really care if it's a well-prepared meal. You just want some food in your belly. And you know, and basically you're communicating to people that I can't be trusted with anything right now. I can't be trusted with anything until I get some food in my system. I'm not hungry, I'm hangry. It's affecting my whole person. And I love that idea with being hangry towards the bread of life, because that is exactly what Jesus is talking about, is that for those of us who hunger and thirst for righteousness, this is his promise from the Sermon on the Mount, right, the Beatitudes, that they will be filled. And I love that idea of desperately desiring, of being the first to say that my entire life is a little bit of a hot mess right now because I'm so hungry for the things of God. And until I feel his presence in my life and I place my faith in the eternal, that all of my temporal stuff is gonna be a little messed up. And really, I just need a little room right now until I put first things first and I fulfill my hanger in eternal matters. And Jesus, this is kind of what he's talking about when he takes something so common. And so kind of the big idea this morning is that the everyday, the common, when combined with faith in Jesus Christ, is a link to the eternal. That's the power of these I am statements. Jesus is talking about something that is so common, so well understood, so available, such an everyday part of his listeners' experience. But when we place our faith, when his listeners place their faith in him, that it has now an eternal truth. It has now an eternal significance. And of course, this morning, we're talking about Jesus is the bread of life, and that when we come to him, we shall not hunger, and when we believe in him, we shall never thirst. That faith in Jesus Christ is perfectly satisfying. That faith in Jesus Christ is perfectly satisfying. And I think we can all see how there are times in our lives where we are dealing with things that are kind of spilling over into every other area of our life. And how powerful is it to be able to link something so common, so readily available, so well understood, and imbue it with faith and have it be a reminder for us of how important it is to place our love and our hope and our trust in Jesus Christ. Is part of the reason why he commanded that we observe communion. That's exactly what we're going to be doing here in a few moments. We're going to take something so common, so readily available, so affordable, it doesn't cost hardly anything to give everybody just a little piece of bread and a little sip of juice. The elements are so understandable to us, but they are symbols, they are links to eternal truths. It's precious to us. It's holy to us. Not because there's anything magical or holy or mystical or even that special about the elements that we're going to share together, but it's the fact that they are links to eternal truths about Jesus Christ. He is the bread of life. Faith in him is perfectly satisfying. It takes care of the hanger that we have in every area of our life. And also, it's a little bit miraculous. This was a statement that Jesus made after performing a miracle, and so we don't want to overlook this. But by way of conclusion, as we move into our time of communion, I'd like to share this quote from a guy named C.S. Lewis, a Christian theologian from the mid to late 1900s. You might remember him or have heard of him. Miracles are a retelling in small letters of the very same story which is written across the whole world in letters too large for some of us to see. There are times in our life where we can see God moving in powerful ways. We can see what he's doing in our lives and in our community and in our families, but we're trying to share our faith with others and they can't see it. They can't see it the same way. You know what would really help them to see God's awesome move in our own personal lives is a small, affordable, tangible, common act of love and mercy, kind of like a little boy sharing his sack lunch. Jesus was able to teach a powerful truth about eternal reality using something that was essentially not worth a whole lot at all. And how amazing is it to us? How hopeful is it to us this morning to think that here we are trying to communicate to those that we know and love how amazing Jesus is, that he's eternal, that his love for us is powerful, and that he provides salvation and forgiveness of sins, and it feels overwhelming. How do we actually share with somebody that truth that means so much to us? Well, when it comes to our spouses, we give them a symbol of our love. It's a simple symbol. It's as simple as a ring. In and of itself, it's not worth much, but it links that truth. And so for our friends and our coworkers and our families that we want to share about Jesus with, but we don't know how to do it because it feels like too much, it could just be something as simple as a simple little act of kindness that we tie to an eternal reality. I really love you, and I'm going to prove it by this simple little kindness that I'm going to give to you, but don't think for a second that that's all that there is for you. I need you to know that this is just a small part of the love that God has for you flowing through me right now. And it's just a note. It's just a card. It's just an act of kindness. It's just a compliment. But it represents how I feel about you, and even more importantly, how God feels towards you as well. And this is what Jesus is modeling by saying, I am the bread of life. It's so common, yet so satisfying. And the challenge for us this morning and the encouragement is, as even as we receive simple elements this morning, to share what God is doing in our lives. It doesn't have to be a well-thought-out gospel plan, Romans Road, 15 things you need to do to be the best Christian that ever walked the planet in southeastern Connecticut. It can be something as simple as a card or a compliment or a simple little gift or a few moments of your time, and then a little statement that says, this is just a small part of the love that I have for you, and it's a tiny little part of the love that God has for you as well. We'll meet a need. We'll meet a temporal need as we point to an eternal truth, and this is what is modeled very, very quickly for us this morning in John chapter 6, verse 35, a piece of bread, a piece of bread. Well, let's prepare our hearts and minds together this morning as we share a piece of bread together, as we take communion.